I could feel my skin turning red. "Excuse me?" He motioned up to the dais where Queen Valentina was sitting beside my empty seat. "What do you see up there?" "A queen," I replied firmly. Eaton shook his head. "That is an empty vessel, chosen to be something nice to look at." "Eaton, that's enough," Silas growled. But his cousin would not be deterred. "If you don't know what's happening along your own border, what's happening to your own people, I can only conclude that you, my lady, are exactly the same. Decoration for your king." I swallowed, wishing I were as cold and clever as Delia Grace. She would have torn this boy to shreds. But part of me sensed that, on some level, he was right. If I was soon to be queen, I had to look at the line of women I was going to be added to. I was no soldier. I was no cartographer. I wasn't book smart or exceedingly kind or remarkable in any way that anyone had ever taken note of. I was pretty, and there was nothing wrong with that, but on its own, that had very little value. Even I knew that. Still, I refused to be shamed for being the one thing I was capable of. "Better an ornament from Koroa than a knave from Isolde," I hissed, pulling my head up high. "Welcome to Koroa, Lord and Lady Northcott. So glad you could come." With that, I turned on my heel and returned to my seat, which I hoped Eaton noted was basically a throne. I drew the image of the sun rising over the river to mind, thinking of things that made me happy and calm. I was not going to cry. Not here, not now. I wasn't going to give anyone in this room, particularly someone from Isolde, reason to think that I was not poised and patient and good enough to be at the right hand of a king. Chapter 15. "Please," I begged. "She's terrible." Jameson chuckled as he walked around his private rooms, removing some of the heavier accessories he was wearing now that the opening of our visit had officially passed. "They're all terrible," he agreed.
"She thinks she's so superior. I cannot spend an evening with her."
I crossed my arms, remembering her pinched face. "I'd rather eat in the stables." He laughed outright at that, the sound matching the roars of the crowd still gathered on the other side of the door.
"As would I. But don't you worry, my Hollis. This visit is a short one, and they'll be gone soon enough."
He came close, wrapping his hands around my waist.
"And we can get back to more important things."
I smiled. "You are the most important thing in my world. So if you insist I eat a meal with that wretched lady, I will." He put a hand under my chin, tilting my face up to his.
"I will spare you. This time," he added in a tone that was close to serious. "But unfortunately, I have to be at dinner tonight with Quentin to talk through a few deals and trades, things that would bore you. So go ahead, spend the night with your ladies."
I took the hand that was beneath my chin and held it up so I could kiss it. "Thank you, Your Majesty." There was a glittering look of satisfaction in his eyes, and it was difficult to concentrate under the weight of his stare.
"You'd best get back," he said. "Don't worry, I'll make an excuse for you tonight."
"Tell her I suffocated under a pile of Isolde dresses," I joked, and left with the sound of his laughter ringing in my ears. Outside, Delia Grace and Nora waited anxiously.
"Come, ladies, I'm not feeling well," I said in mock solemnity. "I think it's best I retire for now."
Delia Grace caught on right away, and she fell into step behind me as I walked cautiously through the crowd. In a corner, I finally caught sight of my parents. My mother was looking down her nose as people came up to her, presumably to congratulate her and father on their great success. Wouldn't it be something to tell everyone I'd been chosen by the king by being the opposite of everything they tried to turn me into?
Even with all that had happened, they hardly spoke to me, save to correct me or attempt to make a decision on my behalf. Their distance only made it that much easier to defy them. I looked over my shoulder at Nora.
Why don't you gather a few other ladies to come by my room? It will be nice to have some more people in that space.
Of course, my lady, she replied gleefully.
I'll see if we can get a hold of a musician or two. Make an afternoon of it, I thought aloud. This plan was sounding better by the minute. I caught Nora before she moved too far.
And get a hold of Scarlett Eastoff if you can. In fact, if the entirety of the Eastoff family would like to escape the presence of their former king, tell them they are welcome in my apartments.
She nodded and broke off to build us a small party. At least this day could take a slight turn for the better. I had been saved from an evening in the company of Valentina, and now I got to dance instead. Nora opened the door for Ioana and Cecily as I helped Ilya Grace put the last of the chairs against the wall. The main space in the greeting area was now cleared for dancing and talking, and I'd called up one of the court musicians so we could have music. After the madness of moving and the tension of meeting Valentina, this was going to be a treat.
Thank you for inviting us, Cecily came and greeted us with a little curtsy.
Oh, you're quite welcome. You remember Delia Grace, of course, I said, gesturing over to her. Delia Grace stood with her head high, knowing that finally she was in a position no one could deny was exalted.
Yes. Beside her, Ioana swallowed. Very nice to see you.
Delia Grace, dear, won't you show them to the refreshments?
She nodded, not needing to speak to anyone she didn't want to at the moment, and I felt sure she was enjoying the knowledge that if anyone so much as breathed at her wrong, I'd eject them from the room. Another knock came, and Nora opened it again.
Scarlett, I called. Oh, so glad you could make it.
I was pleased to see her parents and Saul walk in behind her, but I was surprised to note that the Northcotts had joined her as well. And then, as if he was determined to be seen as an afterthought, Silas Eastoff walked in the door. And there went my heart, skipping as if being trapped in my chest was just too far away for comfort. I cleared my throat, turning to greet my guests. Lord Eastoff came over, bowing before me.
Thank you for letting us come along. It was more unnerving than any of us thought it would be to see King Quentin again.
I tilted my head in sympathy. You may all hide here as long as you like. The apartment extends for days, and we have plenty of food. We'll make a camp, I joked. Please, make yourselves comfortable. Delia Grace was already moving to the music, and I joined her, doing a dance that we'd choreographed ourselves last year.
That's very pretty, Nora commented as Delia Grace and I touched wrists and walked around one another.
Thank you, Delia Grace answered. We spent weeks on it.
You should try your hand at choreographing the one for crowning day, Nora added.
Delia Grace seemed almost stunned by the kind suggestion.
If Lady Hollis wishes it, thank you.
When the dance ended and a new song played, I watched as Nora started up a dance of her own. Honestly, if she and Delia Grace choreographed our dance, it would probably be one of the best I'd ever done. More than once, I got distracted by a pair of blue eyes watching contentedly from a chair against the wall. I looked over at Silas, speaking as I swayed to the music.
Do you dance, sir?
He sat up a little straighter. On occasion, but of everyone in the family, Eton is the best, he said, nodding to his cousin across the room. I searched and found him frowning as he studied the tapestries, hands behind his back, looking as if he were very much here against his will.
You must be joking,
Silas chuckled. Not at all. Well, please don't be offended if I don't extend him an invitation. He made a face. In his current mood, I don't think he'd accept if you did. I sighed, believing that.
Would you?
He swallowed and looked at the floor.
I would, though perhaps not today.
When his face came back up to me, I noted the hint of a blush on his cheeks, and I couldn't blame him for not wanting to dance in front of such an intimate gathering.
Lady Hollis, come and see, Cecily called,
and I went quietly across the room, which thankfully gave me time to clamp down the growing smile on my face.
What was it about Silas Eastoff that turned the air in the room into something sweeter?
He made everything feel easy. Words came out clearer, thoughts became less foggy. I hadn't realized people could do that, could make everything sharper. The room separated into relaxed conversations and fits of giggling, leaving me in a blissfully happy mood. And when I somehow ended up having little Saul as a dance partner, it seemed perfectly natural. I spun him around to much applause, and it was nice to see his tears from yesterday replaced with laughter. When the song ended, I bent down and kissed Saul on the cheek.
Thank you, sir. You're a fine dancer.
The violinist played on in the background as everyone spoke. And as we all sat and conversed, the new apartments felt like they could eventually be a comfortable place. There was a promise of it. The king must care for you very much, Silas said, coming to stand next to me. These rooms are amazing. They remind me of our rooms back at Chetwynd Palace. But the Corowan architecture is so different. I think the stones alone change everything.
How so? I asked. It was the same stone I'd known all my life.
In Iseult, the buildings are tinted slightly green or blue. It's a mineral in the stones by the northern coast, and they're very pretty, but in the winter especially, it makes things seem dark. These stones of yours have such warm colors in them, so everything looks brighter, welcoming. And when you combine that with the impressive scope of the apartments, it's quite striking. I nodded, many feelings playing through my heart. It's easily the most beautiful place I've ever rested my head, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't miss the simplicity of my old room, not to mention knowing what was going to happen most days. I swallowed, once again wondering if I'd said too much, but still feeling there was no one I'd rather share too much with. He smiled softly. There's a beauty in simplicity, isn't there? He looked around the room again. At one point in my life, I might have chosen the new clothes, the finer food, all the trappings of court. But I can say that, in losing them, I've learned that nothing in this world can replace loyalty, patience, and genuine affection. I sighed. I think I might be forced to agree with you. The most valuable thing you can own is the assurance of your place in someone's heart. It is far better than any necklace. Far better than any apartment. We shared a quiet look.
Would you exchange your crown of gold for one of flowers, then? He asked with a smile.
I think I just might.
I think it would suit you, he commented, and I found myself holding eye contact with him for just a moment too long. I told your father you were welcome to hide here as long as you like. If you need anything at all, you know where my rooms are. Don't be afraid to ask. He shook his head.
You've given us so much already. Look at how happy Scarlet is, and Saul. I couldn't ask for more.
He was right. Everyone was smiling, with one exception. Thank you, by the way, for attempting to defend me earlier. Silas glanced up, finding his cousin as I had, alone and looking miserable.
If he knew you, he wouldn't say such things. I told him how good you'd been to us, how kind. I told him how highly my sister speaks of you, how even Sullivan smiles when he hears your name.
Does he? I gushed. Silas nodded proudly. The compliment of Sullivan's quiet approval was not lost on me.
My mother praises your bravery. My father says you're wise for your age, and I... He stopped quickly, and I looked up at him, dying to know the end of that sentence. "And you?" He stared down at me intently, and I could see the words trapped in his mouth. He looked at the ground, took a deep breath, and came back to me. "And I am so pleased to have found a friend in Koroa. I genuinely thought it might be impossible."
"Oh."
I glanced around the room, hoping no one could read the disappointment on my face.
"Well, with how thoughtful your family is, it hardly seems impossible to me. And you shall always have my friendship."
"Thank you," he whispered.
"Silas?"
We both turned to his mother's voice. "Please excuse me," he said, and I had the distinct sensation of being rescued.
"Absolutely. I need to make rounds anyway," I said as he moved away.
For reasons I couldn't say, I picked up a glass of ale and walked over to the scowling figure at the sweeping window.
"Is something wrong, Sir Eaton?" I asked, offering him the cup.
He took it without a word of thanks. "I mean no offense. Your rooms are very pretty. I'm sure you were dying to show them off."
I shook my head. "That's not why I invited you."
"I expect your king wants us to go home with reports of how well he treats his future queen. But I don't have time for gossip. I'd just rather be home."
"Ah, look at that. Something we have in common."
I turned and walked over to Delia Grace, refusing to let him ruin my mood.
"That man is awful. If he wasn't related to people who have been helping me so much, I'd kick him out right now."
"What's this?" Nora asked, hearing the end of my sentence.
"Nothing. Just the Eastoff's cousin Eaton being a bit of a snob."
"As if any Isultan has the room to be snobbish here," Delia Grace grumbled.
I looked over my shoulder, hoping no one was close enough to hear that.
"By the way," she continued, "I think I'm going to take Nora's advice and start choreographing our dance for crowning day. Just so we're prepared."
"Good idea. Everything feels so rushed lately."
"I want to keep it small, only 4 girls. So you need to pick one more and we're all set."
"Good idea." I mentally ran through the other girls at court. I didn't know many very well, and I wasn't too fond of the ones I did. Goodness, if I couldn't think of one I wanted to dance with, how was I supposed to fill a household?
I glanced around the room, trying to see if anyone would make a good addition, when my eyes alighted on the one person I knew would be perfect.
"Scarlett?" I asked, walking over to her as she chatted with her aunt.
"Yes, Lady Hollis?"
"Do you know about crowning day?" I squinted. "I dare say I don't know any of the holidays in Isolde."
"I've heard of it. Isn't it meant to celebrate the forming of the royal line?"
"Yes.
We symbolically recrown the king and pledge our loyalty. It's probably my favorite holiday. Most people sleep all day and the feast begins in the evening and everyone celebrates through the night."
Lady Northcott's eyes widened.
"This sounds like my kind of holiday. Perhaps we will move here too."
I giggled at her enthusiasm.
"Well, part of the celebration is dancing. Nearly every girl at court is in one dance or another, so of course we'll have one. Would you be willing to join Delia Grace, Nora, and myself? It will be a great opportunity to impress the king."
Her face lit up.
"Oh, I'd love to. When do we start?"
"After King Quentin leaves, at least. I won't have any time to think about dancing until then."
"Of course. Let me know when you're practicing and I'll be there."
Her aunt looked so pleased on her behalf, and in the corner, I saw Silas trying not to smile. Sure, Valentina had been cold and Eaton had been rude, twice. But when I saw Silas's glittering eyes looking back at me in appreciation, all I could think of was that it had been such a good day. Chapter 16. The next morning, I sat up in bed,
hopefully inhaling the morning air. If anything could cheer an anxious mood, it was the jugglers and musicians and games on the tournament field.
"I'm so excited for the tournament!"
Nora came and nudged me to move over on the bed. I obliged, and she pulled my hair over my back and started brushing.
"Me too."
I curled my legs up to my chest and wrapped my arms around them, almost feeling like I needed to hold the feeling in.
"Is Jameson riding today?"
I shook my head. "He's going to accompany King Quentin for the whole thing, and seeing as the armor alone would knock Quentin to the ground," I said with a pointed look, "I think he'll stay in the stands today. I'm not even sure if I'll bother wearing a token."
"Why not? You don't have to give it away."
"We'll see. Either way, I want to wear the red underskirt, but with my signature gold on top." She nodded.
"That will look nice. We should probably tuck your hair up so it doesn't get dirty. Come on."
We moved over to the vanity so she could secure my hair back in a golden net, using a wide band of red satin to keep the front of my hair in place. "No question who I'm pulling for today, is there?"
"Not with that much red," she smiled.
I squinted up at her.
"Where's Delia Grace?" "Something was wrong with her dress and she had to go find thread."
I raised my eyebrows. No wonder it's so calm in here. Nora chuckled as I looked through my drawer, fishing out ribbons and handkerchiefs. "Remember to cheer loudly and be careful that your heart doesn't get stolen by a handsome knight," I warned her. Though I knew Jameson would be sitting beside me, I flipped a handkerchief over and over in my hand. I supposed Nora was right. I could have one and not give it away. I slid it up the sleeve of my dress as Delia Grace entered the room, already tense.
"Why is the blasted seamstress so far back in the castle? Doesn't anyone on this side of the palace ever need a needle and thread?"
She huffed as she made sure our dresses were sitting properly and our hair was in place. "I'll make it my first order of business to allot some rooms in these halls for the dressers," I promised. "I'm sure more people need that than we could guess." She tucked a stray hair at my neck back into the net, nodding intently.
"Sometimes, Hollis, I think we're the only ones who actually know what's going on here."
"There, you're good."
"Off we go, ladies," I said,
handing a ribbon to Delia Grace before we moved outside. I kept my head high as I walked across the crowded grounds to where Jameson was settling into the king's box. King Quentin was sitting to his left, with his precious queen beside him. I sighed. At least with her sitting on the other side of the box, the chances of us needing to interact were slim. As I got closer, I saw a young man in armor approaching me.
"Why, Silas Eastoff, is that you?"
I asked, though the answer was plain enough by the sight of his parents and dreadful cousin flanking him. He pulled off his helmet and gave me a quick bow.
"Indeed it is, my Lady Hollis. I'm trying my hand at the sword fight after all. And look," Silas continued, turning a full circle. It didn't take long for me to understand. I met the eyes of his parents, who wore expressions somewhere between satisfied and wary.
"You wear no red, you wear no blue." In the distance, his aunt and uncle called out. Lord and Lady Eastoff waved and started over as I turned to my ladies. "Delia Grace, Nora, you may go to our seats. I'll be along shortly." They quickly obeyed, and I was left with Silas and Eaton, though I wished Eaton would take his sour expression and follow his aunt and uncle.
"Are you not worried about offending someone?" I asked Silas quietly.
"On the contrary, I'm proud of my past and my present, so I hope to honor both kings today."
Every time I learned something new about Silas, I found I admired him even more.
"That's very noble, sir."
Next to him, Eaton rolled his eyes.
"And what of you, Sir Eaton?" I asked. "Will you not participate today? Do you not have the stomach for tournaments?"
He looked down upon me as if I were a bug.
"I do not play at wars, my lady. I fight real ones. A lance and a blunted sword don't frighten me."
I looked back at Silas. My cousin has volunteered for the Sultan army many times, he said proudly. He fights to keep peace along the border. I didn't like that I was spending time with someone who was fighting against my countrymen, but I couldn't deny it took bravery to do that. Well then, you have my admiration for your courage and my compassion for the sacrifices I'm sure you've made. He sneered at me. I don't need either, not from you. I shook my head and gathered my gown. I'm glad you've sheathed your sword today, Sir Eaton. If you could do the same with your tongue, you might find your company much more appreciated. With another fussy expression, he stormed off, leaving me alone with Silas. Finally. I tried. He smiled with a shrug. I know. I like that about you. You're always trying. I considered that. Eaton had called me an ornament. Delia Grace took every opportunity to remind me I was a poor student, and my parents, well, they found endless fault with me. But Silas kept catching things that I didn't know about myself. He said he liked the way I thought. And he was right. I had plenty of good ideas. And he said that I tried, and he was right about that too. I had a hard time giving up. I found myself wishing I had a reason to stay near him just a little bit longer. Instead, I bowed my head to him to take my leave and walked away, looking back as I went. There was some unnameable thing I felt when I was near Silas. Like there was a string connecting us, pulling on me if I wandered too far. I was starting to think that fate had made our paths cross, but considering how differently our paths had begun, I couldn't guess at why. Impulsively, I pulled my handkerchief from my sleeve and let it fall to the ground before rushing away. As soon as I reached the royal box, I dropped into a curtsy before King Jameson. Majesty.
My Lady Hollis, you look radiant today. How am I to focus on the games?
I smiled, then nodded at King Quentin and Queen Valentina. Your Majesties, I hope you slept well. Queen Valentina blinked at me, seemingly confused by the kindness. Thank you. I took my seat and tried to pay attention as the games began. As usual, Jameson's least favorite event, spear on foot, was up first. I couldn't blame him. It was too slow-paced even for me, and I was never sure of the scoring. Some of the other events were much more straightforward.
Ha ha! King Quentin shouted. That's another victory won by my men. You have superb soldiers, Jameson agreed amicably. My father always said so. Though I think the tides will turn once the events are on horseback. Corowans all excel with horses. Even my Hollis rides with speed and grace.
I leaned forward, taking in the praise. You are too kind. And what of you, your majesties? Do you ride?
I used to, Valentina replied with a faint smile, before her husband waved a hand to silence her.
Not if I can help it, he answered quickly.
I made a face at Jameson, who understood my exasperation completely, and when he stuck out his tongue in reply, it was all I could do not to laugh. When the spear event was finally over, the first groups of people came out for the next event, sword. After a few rounds, Silas came onto the field. Look there, your majesty. I rested my arm on Jameson's and pointed with the other. Do you see the young man wearing no colors? He focused on the far side of the arena.
I do.
It's one of the Istaf sons. He wanted to honor you both with his performance, so he chose no side, I explained. He said it was for both his past and present. Jameson considered this.
Very diplomatic, I suppose.
I frowned, a little disappointed with that assessment. I thought of it as a lovely sentiment.
He laughed. Hollis, you have such a simple view of life. I wish I had it myself.
The match began, and I saw quickly that Silas had been right. He was much better at making swords than wielding them. Still, I found myself moving closer and closer to the edge of my seat, hoping he'd somehow take the victory. His footwork was clumsy, but he was strong, swinging the sword with much more conviction than his counterpart, who, by chance, was wearing blue. The crowd cheered and whooped with every blow, and I lifted my hand to my lips, hoping that if Silas didn't win, he'd at least walk away uninjured. I never worried about Jameson when he was jousting. Perhaps it was his skill on horseback, or just the belief that it was impossible for him to fail. Knowing that loss or injury were both very possible made me care about what I was seeing all the more. But I found my hope restored that Silas would at least be safe when I saw a hint of golden fabric peeking out from his sleeve. He'd taken it. I felt my heartbeat fly even faster, knowing that he'd scooped up my favor and was wearing it as his own. I peeked over at Jameson, hoping he didn't notice. I told myself that even if he had, plenty of ladies wove golden thread into their handkerchiefs. It was a thrilling and delicious secret. Silas and his opponent battled back and forth, each refusing to concede. After one of the longest sword fights I'd ever seen, it all came down to the man in blue taking a few missteps and Silas bearing down with the sword hard on his challenger's back. His opponent dropped to the dirt, and the round was over. I stood, cheering with all my might and clapping thunderously. Jameson rose beside me.
"You must really support this swordsman," he said.
"No, my lord," I shouted over the noise, grinning ear to ear. "I support diplomacy." He got a good laugh out of that and waved Silas over.
"Very good show, sir, and I appreciate your statement."
Silas removed his helmet and bowed to the king.
"Thank you, Your Majesty. It was an honor to fight today."
It took King Quentin a few blinks of his eyes to be sure of just what he was seeing, but once he stood furiously.
"Why do you wear no colors?" he demanded. "Where is your blue?"
Jameson turned to him.
"He is a Kuroan now." "He is not!" "He fled your country to find sanctuary here. He has sworn his allegiance to me, and yet he wears no colors so as not to insult you. And you take it upon yourself to shame him?"
Quentin's voice was low and gravelly.
"You and I both know he will never truly be a Kuroan."
Just past them, I could see Queen Valentina clutching her stomach, her eyes flicking between Quentin and Jameson nervously. Up until now, she'd seemed above anything so common as nerves, but she was clearly worried about how this would unfold. I didn't want to see it, and my guess was she didn't either.
"Come with me, Your Majesty. You mustn't get overexcited."
I walked her down the stairs and into the shade behind the royal box. We could still hear Jameson's and Quentin's voices, but their words were muffled.
"Kings, huh?" I joked, trying to break the tension.
"I think it's just men in general," she replied, and we both laughed.
"Can I get you anything? Some water? Something to eat?"
She shook her head.
"No, I'm just happy to get away from the yelling. His Majesty gets upset easily, and I prefer to stay out of all that."
"I feel bad for the swordsman. I think he meant well."
"Silas Eastoff."
She looked at the ground.
"I think he only ever means well."
It was funny. I was aware that Silas knew of the queen, but I'd never considered that she knew of him. "Has he done things like this before?"
"Not exactly. I've caught him in a few conversations where he tried to get the person he was speaking with to consider the other side of the argument. He just wants people to think."
I nodded. "I don't know him well, but that sounds about right." A stampede of footsteps came down the stairs, and Quentin was there, bearing down on his cane, pulling his wife away so quickly I didn't get to curtsy before she went. Jameson came down shortly after, hands on his hips.
Well, the tournament's over. Quentin decided he'd rather rest than be insulted.
Oh, no. Your Majesty, I'm so sorry. He shook his head.
I know that boy was trying to do something clever, but he ended up causing a big mess.
This is so ridiculous. Whatever the color, wasn't this meant to be entertainment? A diversion?
Yes, of course, but...
And doesn't one person desperately seeking middle ground set a great example of something we should all aspire to? Why does everything have to be a competition?
Hollis!
Jameson had never raised his voice to me before. I was stunned into silence.
You don't have to worry about this. You don't have to think so hard. All you need to do is show Kuroa how good a queen you can be. And upstage that girl of Quentin's.
I swallowed. Surely considering how to better our relationship with the largest country on the continent is part of being a good queen.
I'll do that, Hollis.
He shook his head.
That foolish boy. Let's hope this can be undone.
He kissed my hand and went on his way. I was left feeling small. Jameson had never been unhappy with me before. He'd never corrected me before. Then again, I'd never really shared my opinion before. Was Eaton right? Was I an ornament? I couldn't bring myself to believe that. If I was to join a long line of magnificent queens, shouldn't I be following in their footsteps? The footsteps that led to the homes of the poor. The footsteps that led to a battlefield. I'd spent so much time being afraid of measuring up to them. Now the thought of not even trying to come close was unimaginable. I marched over to where the competitors were milling about, hoping I'd be able to find a particular family in the mass of people. I pushed through the crowds until I, unfortunately, saw a familiar face. Eaton! I called. He turned, and I waved, trying to get his attention. He tipped his head in acknowledgement. Where's Silas? Sighing, he walked over and grabbed me from the swarm. Do you not have eyes? I'm not as tall as you. Is he all right?
Yes. Uncle Dashiell tucked him away near the tree line while things calmed down, and most everyone is going in the opposite direction now. Here, this way.
I followed as best I could, trying to keep up with his long strides. We finally came upon them, Silas sitting on a barrel, talking to his parents with a bewildered expression on his face. Once he saw me, he stood and began attempting to atone for his mistakes immediately.
Lady Hollis, I'm so sorry. You have to apologize to the king for me.
Slow down, I insisted. He took my hands, pleading.
If King Jameson revokes our permit to settle because of me, Hollis, my family.
His hands were rough, but those blue eyes were so gentle. I know, I sighed. Please tell me you finished making the pieces I mentioned when we first heard about the king coming to visit. He nodded. We stayed up late to make sure they were done before he came, but no one gave us instructions on when to present them. Perfect, I said. I need to get a letter to Queen Valentina. Chapter 17. I stood still as Delia Grace repeatedly laced the gown, trying to get it to sit right. This is so strange, she said. How do your arms feel? Heavy, I admitted. Delia Grace went back to the parcel and pulled out one more thing. For your head. We can use something of yours if you prefer. Valentina's things were quite beautiful. The craftsmanship was not nearly so detailed as the work done in Kuroa, but the gemstones were bigger, more substantial. If she sent it, I will wear it. I walked around my apartments carrying books and acclimating to the weight of the sleeves and headpiece. In the middle of my seventh lap, Silas and Sullivan came in, dressed in their best and carrying their work on black pillows. Sullivan fell behind his brother, taking in Nora and Delia Grace with trepidation. Though I longed to speak to Silas, I went to his brother first. "These ladies are all my friends," I said, placing a hand on his arm. "And tonight, you needn't say a word. Only lift the pillow so King Jameson may take your gift." He nodded, giving me the tiniest of smiles. "And what are you smirking about?" I asked, turning to Silas. "Nothing. It's just amazing to see you in Isolde in blue. You could almost pass for a girl back home." "If I grew an inch or two and spent less time in the sun, perhaps?" "Perhaps," he replied, and then lowered his voice. "I don't know if this will mend anything, Lady Hollis." "I know," I answered, fidgeting with my heavy clothes. "But we need to try." After a quick knock, Valentina walked in, her single lady-in-waiting behind her. I had chosen the palest red dress I could find for her, almost bordering on pink, and, as I'd hoped, it worked nicely with her skin. "What do you think, my lady?" she asked. "I think you should keep it. It looks far better on you than it ever has on me." She smiled, loving the praise. Valentina was a new person when she smiled. "My arms feel so free," she said, lifting them above her head. "Can you please tell me why it is that the ladies in Isolde wear so much fabric on their sleeves?" I asked in exasperation. She laughed. "One, it's a sign of status. It says you have the means to afford the extra fabric, and you don't have to work with your hands. Ladies in the country don't wear them, or at least not so long. And, two, they keep you warm. It's much cooler in Isolde." "Ah," I said. It made sense, though it wasn't a practice I was planning to adopt, whether I could afford it or not.
"When she smiles, you two could pass for sisters," Delia Grace whispered beside me.
When we met, I'd been too nervous to think about anything more than making a good first impression, but she was right. Between our hair and the angle of our chins, we could pass for relatives at least.
"I was told dinner began 15 minutes ago, so everyone should be seated," she offered. "I am ready when you are."
"Excellent. Delia Grace, Nora, if you will please take the Queen's Lady with you now so you can all be seated." They obeyed, and the very confused woman walked with them out of the room. "Sullivan, if you will please walk behind Queen Valentina, and Silas, please stay with me." He nodded. "Of course, my lady." Then he lowered his voice. "It may be easier for my brother if he is with you." I ducked my eyes before summoning the courage to answer. "But I need you with me. Please?" He stared back at me for a long moment, as if he wanted to say something in return. In the end, he simply nodded, and our little party exited the room. The hallways were all but empty. Everyone wanted to attend the feast, if only for the lavish meal. "What are the chances your king is still mad?" I asked Valentina.
"Hi, he doesn't forget much."
"Do you think this will do anything?" She considered.
"Your king seems more reasonable than most, so having him back in good spirits will help. And I think if those beneath us can see our behavior, they will try to model it. A lamb will only go where its shepherd takes it."
"A very good point, Your Majesty." I looked up at Valentina. She really was quite pretty, with hair almost the shade of mine, but skin closer to milk than honey. And she was so statuesque that even in my highest heeled shoes, I didn't quite come up to her height. "Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I realize I misspoke when we met, and it got everything off to a bad start. I didn't mean to offend you, and I'm so grateful to have your help." She brushed her hand lazily at me.
"You didn't offend me. Sometimes it's easier, you know, to just be silent."
I giggled.
Silence is not a skill of mine.
She pressed her lips together, seeming to already have gathered that much about me.
A few years with the crown on your head might change that.
I wanted to ask what she meant by that, but we were already at the entrance of the great room. A knot of dread settled in my stomach, and I feared that, just like Silas, we would mean well but make things worse. Valentina must have sensed my trepidation, because she reached out and we entered the hall, holding one another's hands. No one noticed us at first, but I heard gasps and whispers as whole sections of the room fell into a hush to see what would happen when we reached the head table. Once the change in sound reached Jameson's ear, he looked up, eyes going straight down the center walkway. I watched as his eyes settled on the red dress, a smile almost spreading across his face before he realized the girl in it wasn't me. His eyes flicked immediately to her right, and his mouth hung slightly open as he took me in. He spoke quietly to King Quentin, who eventually looked up from his food, grumpy as ever. Thankfully, the sight of his wife in Corowan red and me in Isolde in blue was enough to stun him into silence. We approached the dais and curtsied before them, and, as Valentina held the higher rank, she spoke first.
Your Majesties, we come here tonight to appeal for peace between our two great kingdoms, she said. While the missteps of your people may be great, you are both better than your subjects, and we look to you for guidance. I wear red because I have made a friend in Corowa.
And I wear blue, because I have made yet another friend from Isolde. I gestured for Sullivan and Silas to come forward. These crowns of gold, shaped like olive branches, are for you, your majesties. Made by a family born in Isolde and living in Corowa. May they be a model of our brotherhood for years to come. The crowd behind us applauded, and I turned to pick up the first crown.
It's so light, I exclaimed.
I did my best for you, Silas said quietly. My gaze on him lingered a moment longer than I meant for it to, before I reached across the table to place the crown on Queen Quentin's head, as Queen Valentina did the same with Jameson. He was smiling, speaking to her, and King Quentin focused on me.
I see you've become close with the Eastoffs, he remarked.
I try to be an excellent hostess at the castle for His Majesty's sake, regardless of where our guests are from. He nodded.
I'd suggest you take care. People in Isolde tend to keep their distance from them these days.
I can't imagine why, I snapped, before remembering I was here to mend bridges, not take to them with an axe. I swallowed, starting again. They have been humble and most helpful since their arrival. The look in his eyes was more of a warning than his words.
If you wish to stand by the fire, by all means. You're the one who will be burned.
I curtsied again to him, as I knew I must, but I hated pretending to give any level of respect to that man. I nodded to Silas and Sullivan that they could go, mouthing my thanks before turning to Queen Valentina.
You are wiser than anyone has guessed. We will talk more tomorrow, she said into my ear, before we crossed paths and went to go sit by our kings.
What do you think? I asked Jameson as I settled into place.
I think if you fell off a boat in that, the sleeves would drag you straight to the bottom.
I laughed.
I had to practice walking, I admitted.
He smiled.
Teasing aside, you look beautiful in anything you're ever in.
He sat back, sipping his drink.
I hear it's the fashion for brides to wear white these days. Won't that be something?
I looked down, blushing. Of course, I was glad he still found me pretty in Isolde in blue. But I wondered how he felt about what Valentina and I had done, if he appreciated our strategizing and hard work. Before I could ask, King Quentin tapped Jameson's shoulder.
There's no point arguing,
We need to get back to that contract, he urged.
Out of his sight, I let out a sigh. I had no idea what they were working on, but I was pleased they weren't abandoning it over a single battle at a tournament. Even if Jameson said nothing in thanks, at least this moment had been a success. Around the room, people were chatting and eating and laughing, and though Valentina and I hadn't walked the borders or pulled a king back from war, we'd made steps toward peace. I hoped the queens before me would have approved. Judging by the smiling faces and relaxed shoulders around the room, it seemed most people in the court did. From his table, Silas caught my eye and lifted his glass to me. I did the same in return and took a drink. No, that boy was only good, and nothing about him could leave me burned. The center of the floor where Valentina and I had walked down was now filling with people dancing as the meal came to a close and the music changed. I watched with trepidation as Silas rose from his table and walked up to the dais. Your Majesty, he said, bowing before Jameson. I can see that you and King Quentin are busy. I was wondering if I might ask the Lady Hollis to dance. Jameson smiled slyly.
Only if she wishes it.
I took a breath. Well, if I can't dance with you. I kissed his cheek and walked down to meet Silas, standing beside him while the song came to a close. I wanted to make good on what I said, that I'd dance with you if you ever invited me to, he whispered. I spoke softly. But I never got that far. I couldn't wait. Hope you don't mind. I smiled. Not at all. I have been dying to dance, and Jameson has been more interested in watching lately. I'm just so thankful to have someone ask me. None of the other gentlemen at court will now.
Ah, I see.
Well, for one song, let's forget about kings and colors and all the rest. Let's just have a lovely dance, yes? Yes, I sighed. The music began, and we lined up across from each other, moving in time with the other couples. I don't know how to thank you for this, I said. You and your family saved us tonight. He rolled his eyes.
But only after I got us into trouble.
Nonsense. I think we all know who the real problem here is. I swung in, placing my hand in Silas's. His rough skin held mine so delicately, and I could see the remnants of a gentleman in the gesture. All the same, it was the least we could do. Has the king compensated you yet?
He shook his head. We agreed there were no kings for this dance.
He was right. Very well. We crossed arms and spun in circles. He wasn't the best partner I'd ever had, but he was steadier than Jameson. I'm not sure there would be much occasion after this, but I do hope we can speak more soon, he said. I agree. It's been nice to have someone to talk to. Another thing I need to thank you for. He smiled down at me, the unrestrained admiration in his gaze making me forget that there were other people in the room. I am here whenever you need me. If anyone is in debt, it's me. You offered my family a home. You defended my actions publicly. You are quite a remarkable lady, Hollis. His face grew a little darker when he added, You will be an unforgettable queen. The song ended, and I curtsied to him. I turned to look at Jameson to see if he was pleased by the dance. He wasn't even looking. I flicked my eyes to Silas and nodded that he should follow me to the great room. I went from the room and waited a ways down the hallway. I heard as the next song began, and I saw Silas's shadow before he arrived where I was standing. The dance is over, so now I have to say it again. If the king has not compensated you for your work, I want to make sure that happens. Silas looked down, shaking his head. You needn't worry about that. They were gifts. I insist. This whole moment tonight wouldn't have happened without your family, so I am in your debt. You gave us a place to live. We are in yours. I placed my hands on my hips, which was a surprising struggle given the sleeves. He noted it and laughed at me.
Stop! I have been trying so hard.
I know, he said, wiping the smile off his face. And, wardrobe issues aside, you've done a wonderful job. He gestured toward the great room. They're not just whispering about how gracefully you've behaved tonight, Hollis. They're saying they've known all along what a great queen you'd be. The word came out a hopeful whisper.
Really?
He nodded. You've done beautifully. I stared at him, at the glimmering hope in his blue eyes. There really was something extraordinary about that blue, and the way his hair shifted when he dropped his shoulder, and how he smiled, as if he wasn't holding anything back, saving his worry and care and affection for anyone else. I feel so fortunate to have met you, I confessed. Since you've arrived, I've felt different. I feel different too, he said, his voice dropping to a whisper. When you're near. It suddenly became clear to me that we were very much alone. Footsteps in these vast hallways were unmistakable, and there was no such sound. I should probably get back, I breathed. Yes. But neither of us moved, until we both did, meeting in the middle of the hallway for a stolen kiss. Silas cupped my cheeks, holding me with such tenderness that I felt everything inside my body melting. I could feel the calluses on his fingers as they traced the edges of my face, and I couldn't help but compare the feeling to that of Jameson's perfectly smooth hands. There was something about the awareness of Silas's hard work, the labor that earned him those calluses, that made me treasure his touch. I could have stayed lost in it for ages, but I heard the sound of distant footsteps. Jerking away, I couldn't even bring myself to look into his eyes. What had I done? Wait 5 minutes and then go back, I whispered urgently. For my sake, please tell no one. I was already walking when he simply replied, If you wish. I moved toward the great room with my head high, trying to convince myself that if I simply looked confident, then no one could possibly suspect I just kissed someone who was decidedly not my intended, who was a foreigner, who was, by every measure I'd been taught to value, a commoner. He'd been right. Everywhere I turned, people were giving me knowing looks and thankful smiles. They'd finally come to respect me at the very moment I'd let them all down. I walked up to the head table, kissing Jameson on the cheek. He gave me a warm look, but continued his conversation with King Quentin. I was counting the minutes until that man left, taking his entourage with him. I needed everything to go back to normal. But I was starting to wonder if there'd ever be a normal. Since the moment I'd locked eyes with Silas Eastoff, I'd felt something. The string was pulling me, taut and unyielding. I couldn't help but notice I still felt that pull as he walked into the hall, eyes downcast, as if he couldn't muster the strength to fake any kind of happiness. I'd said he couldn't burn me. I still believed that. If I was going to go up in flames, it would be my own doing. Chapter 18. I inhaled deeply, taking in the scent of freshly blossoming flowers. Though I could have happily spent an hour by myself in the maze of hedges and the peaceful gardens of Koreskin, it was surprisingly pleasant to sit by Queen Valentina as Jameson and King Quentin practiced their archery. Jameson had beautiful form, and I was sure Quentin must have at some point as well. These days, the arching of his back made pulling the bows securely a bit of a challenge. Still, I could see in his steady fingers and the sureness of his gaze that he knew precisely what he was doing.
Valentina and I took refuge in the shade of several large parasols being held above us by palace servants, and we watched as Jameson let another arrow fly. It hit very close to its mark, and he turned back to me, raising his eyebrows and clearly waiting for praise.
"Bravo, my lord,"
I called, swallowing hard immediately after. It was difficult to get the words out. There was a secret kiss hiding in my throat, blocking all the words I knew I was supposed to say, halting all the actions I knew I was meant to do. I feared that something about the set of my smile or the shade of my eyes was going to give me away. Any minute, Jameson was going to know that I'd betrayed him. And even to this second, I couldn't explain how it had happened. I also couldn't change it. The best I could hope for was to forget it ever happened and continue walking steadily toward Jameson and the crown. I sighed, turning to Valentina. "I want to thank you again for yesterday," I began, trying to restart our easy conversation from the night before. It was much harder when things felt so official.
"I did very little in the grand scheme. You orchestrated everything. I can see why your king favors you so much."
She looked over at him admiringly. There really was no other way to look at Jameson.
"Then why did you kiss someone else?"
I'm still not sure what made him choose me," I started, stumbling over the words. "Some say it's because I make him laugh." I tilted my head, still not sure what the true answer to this question was.
"I supposed Eaton would have said it was my pretty face."
"How did you meet King Quentin?" She shrugged.
"There isn't much to say. I have been at court with my parents since I was a child. The court is large, so we didn't truly cross paths until a few years ago. That was that."
I cast a knowing look at her. "That sounds close to my story. Amazing what can happen when you leave the country for a palace."
"True. The castle had all but been our home for years. We only left it to travel."
A whisper of a smile crept onto her lip.